Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm Martha Hill. I'm an independent artist in Newcastle in the north of England.
I don't know anything. I mean, I don't know formal training, what instruments you played, how you learned. Give me a little bit of that to start.
I think, so I got into music. My mum is a really good pianist. And she kind of tried to teach me piano when I was a child, and that didn't really go very well. We used to fight a lot about playing piano.
You mean you didn't want to? You didn't want to play?
It's not that I didn't want to play. I've never been into sight reading. It doesn't. So then I started playing trombone, and trombone went really well for me because it's one note at a time. It's quite a slow instrument, so the sight reading's easy, you know. But that whole, like, I don't know. I've always been more of like an oral learner. So, and the piano is just tough to learn in that way. It was the trombone, you can kind of get by just being like, oh, so it sounds like that. Okay, so I'll play it.
You grew up on, quote, and again, we'll see how accurate I can be. I'll do this in the announcer voice. You grew up on a remote peninsula in Scotland.
Yeah, that's true.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Dunoon is a town on Cowell Peninsula on the west coast. So that's Glasgow side. If you're in Glasgow, you get a train and then you get a ferry and then you're in Dunoon.
Oh, just a train and a ferry. So it's really easy to get there.
It's not like, you know, the Hebrides. It's not way, way out, you know, but it's a bit of a mission, but it's just because it's cut off by a ferry. So people think it's
remote,
tropical. Yeah, exactly. But so it's not that remote, to be honest, but I'm well happy to have grown up there. It's a beautiful place.
So do you get to wear the I had a troubled childhood artist badge, or you don't?
Nah, my childhood was great. I grew up as one of six siblings. I've got amazing parents. We all get on. I mean, I could probably try and pull something out of the woodwork, but it would be far-fetched.
But no, how are you going to put all your pain into your music, Martha?
I know, I've been struggling with that, actually. I think it's a funny thing, the pain and music thing, because I think I definitely used to write where I would be having some kind of like massive meltdown, and then I would need to write a song, and it would be this kind of cathartic release that had to happen. But now I've outgrown my angsty teenage years, mostly. And now it's kind of like I don't get that need to release all of that emotional kind of energy or whatever. So I've had to start really putting time aside to write songs. But I actually think my songwriting's got better. So I don't think that they are necessarily linked.
Did you go to the city a lot for music?
For a year I got, because I took the classical trombone quite seriously for a while, like in my late teenage years. And I would go up to the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. I got like a scholarship to go up there on a Saturday and play trombone. But the classical music world never suited me. It was always a bit too rigid, and everyone was always really rich, and it was just not a world I was that used to. And I left for my last year of school. I went to Douglas Music Academy to study trombone, and I lasted one term and then I quit, and that's when I left to go busking.
Do you just go in to your parents and go, you know what I'm gonna do now? I mean, because you had a mom who was musically inclined.
Yeah.
How do you go to your parents and say, oh, by the way, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go on the streets and play for money? How do you do that?
I think I have cousins who live in the Northeast, and they were all in bands and like having a laugh and playing tunes and stuff. And Dunoon, for all of its good things, didn't really have any of that. So that was my only connection to the life that I wanted to live. And I met a friend of my cousin, and we met three times. We'd met like at a festival, then at a family gathering or whatever. But we really got on well, and we were like, look, I'm going to drop out of music school. She's dropped out of music college. We just got a place together in Newcastle. And then we started busking. So it was really through her that I kind of got into the busking. And, you know, my parents were fine about it. I think they've always trusted my instinct, and I've always kind of my head's always been reasonably level, so I don't think that it ever seemed like a disaster waiting to happen or anything. I think my mum wanted me to go to uni, but there wasn't massive pressure. That's just what everybody was doing when I was leaving school. I don't think that's the case so much anymore, but when I left school, everyone went to university. But
catch me up, you're busking at 17, and how many years later are we now, and how did you go from busking to becoming a recording artist? And I'm sure there's multiple steps there.
I was busking. I did a lot of traveling. So I think I was kind of going to and from Europe, just sort of busking, or like working on farms and wild camping and hitching around and living in squats and, you know, just doing what I wanted to do, until I was probably about 20. So that's a good 3 years. And then I was busking on Northumberland Street. That's the main city, the main street in Newcastle. And this circus procession went past. And I was like, well, that's pretty cool. So I just called one of them over and I was like, what he's up to? I just learned how to juggle in this squat I was living in Spain. So I kind of wanted to do a bit of circusy stuff. And the person who I grabbed, it was the accordion player in a local band called Holy Moly and the Crackers. And they were looking for a trombone player. So I joined their band playing trombone. And then I kind of toured around the UK and Europe with them for a good couple of years. And then I would start sort of supporting them at gigs and really learning, because I think that's the main thing to growing up in a place with, you know, that's cut off from the city. That's the thought of being, I remember being about 8 or 9 and being like, I'd love to be a singer, but there's absolutely no way that's ever going to happen. You know, it's such a pipe dream, you know, no connection to the music industry, no money behind anything, just no way to kind of open that door into even knowing what to look for, let alone how to look for it. You know, like I don't know what an agent is, a manager, a producer. These are not words I've ever heard. So I think playing trombone with them really just opened the door to this world of like, oh, actually this is accessible if you just go out and start doing stuff. So that's what I did. I think I decided to set it up in the January, and by February I'd formed a band and had booked a tour, and we were touring in the UK.
So wow.
I just went for it. I just thought, all right, if that's how you do it, then I'll do it. And then that's kind of been my life for the past 3 years. So I've got management now. I got a manager in January. Before that, I did everything on my own.
This past January?
Yeah, just January, just gone. So this year, I got a manager and a booking agent have come on board. But before that, I just did everything. Yeah.
So you just kind of figured it all out. It's kind of like, okay, this is, but obviously you had this, by now you had some support to learn how to record and how to do all of this that it requires.
Things kind of came in bits and bobs. So the main thing Holy Moly taught me was touring. That's what they do. You know, they were out 3-4 times a week for that first year I was with them. It was mental. We did like over 30 festivals in one summer. It was insane. I guess you just learn and you learn from your mistakes, and you'd see what other people were doing. So I'd look at an artist who was doing similar stuff to me and I'd be like, where did they go on tour? They went to these places. So I'd write them down and I'd get in touch with them.
How do you go from that to, oh, wait a minute, BBC Introducing? Did you submit music?
BBC Introducing in the Northeast have just been so massively supportive. And that's one of the things, because Newcastle is a small city, but that's one of the things that's really beneficial to not living in London, is that you have like that big support network behind you as a result. You know, there's not, there is competition and the scene's amazing, but there's not like, you know, 2,000 of us, there's like 50 of us. So I've had that massive support from them, really pushing stuff. And then I was there one to watch for 2020, which meant that I got to go down to Maida Vale Studios to record, which was cool. It was really surreal to be there.
Kickstarter. I mean, your first EP, did you do a Kickstarter for that too?
Yeah, I did. It was the Be Still EP.
Right.
And it worked well. It's quite funny. I'm halfway through this one, so I'm not totally sure how it's going to go. But it's a bit of a funny time to be asking people for money. You know, when people's jobs are at risk, people are being made redundant. So, but it hopefully tricky. It'll go well, you know.
Your voice, your pacing, your accent does come through. There is no question that, you know, we can hear that, which in a lot of even UK artists, you don't.
Yeah.
But when you kind of wake up in the morning and think, what is this and what you're doing and your pacing and your way that you go about what you're doing, I mean, do you think about that at all? I mean, or do you just say, oh, this is my voice and this is what I do?
It's a slightly conscious decision to not to bring out the accent, but not to hide it. I like the way things sound interesting when they're in their proper voice, you know, and not just...
Yes.
At least try to sing in your own accent.
Do you find that people are already, when they're talking to you, trying to compare you to people? Are they saying, well, she kind of sounds a little bit like Adele, but she also kind of sounds a little bit like...
I think you get that. People feel comfortable when they've put you in their... when they've put you in their mind box, you know, like, okay, so this is where she fits. And I think this is one of those, I've been thinking about this a lot, because I don't actually quite see where I fit in terms of the kind of musicians that we've got at the moment. And I think maybe if I was male, making the music that I make.
Is there a filter for a Martha Hill song? When you're writing a song, how do you know that it's a song that you're going to perform and record?
I think that... the general way that I kind of try and go about writing is I like to make... So this is the alt-pop thing, and I think it kind of fits for this reason that I like to make music that is... I like choruses, I like things that are accessible, I like good melodies. You know, fair enough if you want to make really intricate, complex music, but I just like stuff that is straight up, sounds good, you know? That's what I like. But I also do like it when things are a bit weird, and when it's like... okay, oh, I wasn't expecting that to go there when it did that, or what's that weird sound in the background, or whatever. So my aim is generally to make a song that's, you know, got a nice chorus, but maybe catches your ear because it's not quite what you'd expect.
The songs that we've heard so far, who else plays on them? Are these friends of yours? How much of it do you play, and how much do they play? And back in the day, before... doing what you have to do now, you were going into studios and producers and all of that. Is that true?
Yeah, I was, yeah. I have my solid band that are generally the same people. I've got a cellist called Katie Mack, who does her own stuff, actually. It's pretty nice. You should check it out. And then there's Rob Griffiths, who plays keys, and Will, who drums. But then generally when I record, I like electronic drums, so he doesn't come into the studio with me, but that's who I tour with.
That's interesting.
I usually do all the vocals, a lot of the guitars, maybe some of the keys. I tend to have a bit more of like a backseat driver production technique, where I'm like, oh, what about this sound? Oh, make it a bit more like that. And I kind of guide what they're doing rather than actually doing it myself, because other people are so much better at programming than I am and producing beats and stuff. Like, it's just not a skill that I have, and my inability to get on with technology means it's probably not a skill I'll ever have. So I like to sit in the studio and be like, oh, what about this rhythm there on that kind of thing, and this is what I'm hearing, and I like bouncing off people. And
let's talk grilled cheese.
I know, it is an American title, isn't it?
How? And by the way, I'm not joking, I posted on my socials that I'm going to go afterwards, because I'm going to have lunch right after this, and I'm going to make myself a grilled cheese in your honor. I'll take a picture and send it to you.
Please,
I really am.
However,
what's really interesting, and I saw that you talked about this, I'm not going to make it with American cheese.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was. Grilled cheese, like, you want actual cheese, surely, because that's all it is. Like, a burger is kind of just... The cheese on the burger is just, like, sauce, isn't it, or something. It's not the main event. But in a grilled cheese, the cheese is the
But it's so funny, because American cheese... Let's put it this way. I can tell you from reality that, say, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, when you went to a supermarket, there was mostly American cheese.
Was it? Whoa.
Yes, yes. We were not as sophisticated as when I went to the UK 20 years ago, 25 years ago, the first time, it's like, oh my God, here are all these posh cheeses.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you say medium cheddar was the right thing? I forget.
I think so. Like, medium or light. Like, you don't want extra mature. Like, you don't want it to be too far from the American cheese that it's like really posh and it doesn't melt properly. But you don't want it to be so far to the American cheese.
Yeah, you can't do mozzarella. You can't do Gruyere.
No.
But I mean, the song isn't really about grilled cheese. And in the video, unless I'm wrong, you're eating pasta.
Yeah, I am eating pasta. I know. I think I need to make another recipe video on pasta as well. It's so funny. I put that video up, and one of my mates, the only thing he said about it was, "Pasta looks a bit dry." That was it. His only comment.
No, really? Because people have so much time on their hands.
That's northern humor. It's just be mean.
Because you've had such an interesting mix of what you've had so far.
Yeah.
So where are you taking that?
What's next? I don't know. It's kind of a hard one to predict, because I think that things come out of the blue all the time. You know, this BBC playlist, I wasn't expecting that, you know? So that was really cool. And I think that I have like general kind of aims, which is just to keep going and gain more followers, more fans, more listeners, you know, play bigger gigs. But I don't have a kind of end, like, golden goal that I want to get to. I think if you do that, then you can end up forgetting to enjoy where you are.
Talk to me about this Women Are Mint.
So Women Are Mint is a festival that I put on in Newcastle. It's a 3-day festival featuring with an all-female lineup. The last one was last year, and the next one was meant to be in May, but it's been postponed, obviously. And it started as a series of events where I hosted, a musician would come in. I did it with a theatre in Newcastle called Alphabet Theatre, and we'd get a musician in and they'd play a gig, and then there'd be a break and the audience would write down questions for the female musician and then she'd answer them. So we had one on pro-choice, we had one on women with disabilities, one on women within the folk within folk music, and they just turned out to be really important and interesting spaces to create. And I just wanted to bring that forward, so I made the festival. So the Friday was always live, Saturday was kind of more of a club night, and then the Sunday was during the day, so it was accessible to young mothers.
That's a lot. I mean, let me say, that is a lot of thinking. That's not just, I'm going to throw together some musicians. You sat down and said, what do I want to accomplish here? That's a lot of purpose.
It was cool that way, you know? And also having... workshops as well, starting off each day, and it just gave it a really nice vibe. So that's what Women Are Mint began as, and then I've got the playlist as well. And to be honest with you, the playlist is just whatever I'm enjoying listening to. That's what I put on it.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs is the bread, and songs by others in between.